Welcome to episode 5 of the Set List Audio Club with Hayden and Dan. On this week's episode, we feature Dave Grohl in all of his glory. And to do that, we're going to cover the Foo Fighters, Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace, as well as the Them Crooked Vultures self-titled album. We've got a great show for you today, so grab a drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
But like all of the counters that you sit at were literally just like wood with like those swivel stools from the 30s.
Oh, heck yeah.
Dude,
LA Noir vibes.
Yeah, kind of. Like kind of felt that way.
Yeah.
Like a dark, dark, stormy night. You're sitting there just eating a burger. It's like 1 a.m. They're like, you need to pay and go home, sweetie. And you're like, I know, man.
You can't stay here.
You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here. But yeah,
that's cool, though. How close is that to Son of Thurman?
Right across the street.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's literally like you can...
I think like you can see one from the other.
Yeah, they're literally like right there.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think we went for my dad's birthday. We went to Son of Thurman. And that was, but nice. I went there before I ever went to the actual Thurman Cafe in German.
Oh, see, I've only ever been to the OG. And buddy, that place, I mean, you want to talk about it? You want to talk about an old dive bar, Thurman's Cafe,
yeah.
Columbus, Ohio. That's the place
to go.
It's
great,
in.
Though.
Yep.
Were they a Man versus Food?
Yeah. He tried the Therminator.
Okay. That's what I thought. With the Therminator? It's like a pound and a half of burger or some crazy crap.
That's just the hamburger patties.
Yeah, I know. And then they like pile it up. There's like
yep. it
all
comes
kinds
with
of other shit.
It comes with like ham, onions, mushrooms, lettuce, tomato, onion, 5 different sauces. Like you name it, it comes out. It's like 5 sandwiches in one.
It's insane. I honestly don't know how humans eat that.
It took me 3 full meals to eat one. Like 3 days. Like I had it for dinner 3 nights in a row. It was so much.
Hey, at least that's like that's value though. You paid what? Probably $20 for that?
I don't remember. Probably more than that, but still that's 3. I got 3 dinners
out of
it. I'd
have to look at the menu. It's been a long time since I've been down there. I think the last time you and I went, we just went for drinks cuz the kitchen was closed.
Yeah, I think we went late. Let's just kind of get into it. So this is Dave Grohl week.
Woohoo! Dave Grohl week. Dude, Dave Grohl's the best.
He's a cool guy.
I don't care what anybody says. He's the epitome of the rock star. He's the type of rock star that like you could be and it wouldn't ruin your life. Like he doesn't strike me as the alcoholic type. He doesn't strike me as like the drug addicted type.
No,
aside
not
from
at
caffeine.
All.
But
Fresh pots.
Fresh pots? Dude. But yeah, Dave Grohl's like, he's just one of the coolest fellas. Like he just seems like one of the dudes. Like if I could get a beer with Dave Grohl, like I'd totally do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know anybody that would
say
that.
10 times out of 10. And potentially a jam session, like, that would be so fun.
How wild would that be? Get a jam session. Like, Dave Grohl just comes over to your house, and you're just like, here's my drums, I'm sorry, they suck. And he's just like...
He's like, nah, bro, let's kick it.
He's like, these look sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like he would totally be down for everything.
He would not shit on your drums, even though they're not, like, you know, top, like, top line stuff. Cool guy.
He'd be like, let me on the kit. I'd be like, yes, sir, Dave Grohl.
You got it, boss. No, I think he's definitely like he's kind of like the Tony Hawk of like rock stars. Cause like Tony Hawk has that same, like, if he showed up at a skate park, he would totally help like the 11-year-olds who are still learning how to skate. Like he wouldn't try to show off. He'd be coaching. And like the parents would be like, there's a weird, creepy old man over there. And then like their son's just like, do you have any idea who that is?
That guy can do a 900.
Do you know how rich he was when he was my age, mother?
How many video games do you have, mom?
Just keep making snide references. Don't actually tell your mother who he is. Just keep making
references. never actually tell her who it is.
Just... Don't directly give her a name. Just keep referencing him in odd, specific ways.
Just referencing his accomplishments, but never actually talking about who he is.
Do you actually get mistaken for yourself at the airport, mom?
That's one of my favorite things on the internet, too,
oh, yeah.
is Tony Hawk not being recognized, but he's, like, there in person. Like, I think my favorite was the airport incident, actually, where he, like, showed up and was, like, showing them his ID, and they were like, oh, Tony Hawk, I wonder what that guy's up to, and he's like,
this?
Dude, his Twitter feed is
oh, I follow him specifically
unbeaten.
Because I love keeping up to date with the times that he gets mistaken for himself at the airport.
It's so good.
It's great.
It's so good. I also love his antics where he, like, drives around yelling at kids, telling them to do kickflips. He'll like see a bunch of kids like skating in a nearby park and he'll be driving by and just roll down his window and
do a kickflip.
So good.
That's great.
So good. And sometimes they'll like do it. I think if they land it, he'll like give them merch or something. I forget.
Here, have a free skateboard.
I think there's videos on YouTube about it. I don't know if he's giving out skateboards, but
probably not. That'd be expensive.
Yeah, but it's Tony Hawk. So
anyways, let's circle this back to why we're here. So since it is Dave Grohl week.
We're talking about Dave Grohl this week.
That's right. Not Tony Hawk. But we can make that happen. We can do like a Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtrack week.
Like songs from the Pro Skater soundtrack?
Yeah, just like you pick like one of the
games. That's a good idea.
Yeah. We could do like a video game soundtrack.
For those listening, if you guys have a favorite track from the Pro Skater series, send it to us via email.
I do.
Setlistac@gmail.com. Send it to me.
Very good idea. We'd love to read them. Absolutely. My favorite would be Guerrilla Radio, which is...
Rage Against the Machine, man?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hell yeah. Love that pick. But yeah, maybe we'll do an episode in season two.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. But anyways, we're going to get into it. So I've got some fun facts about Dave Grohl this week, because we wanted to do a little extra, because we wanted to honor Dave Grohl well.
We're going above and beyond this week.
A little bit extra. But one of the first fun facts I have is that he actually doesn't learn by reading sheet music or like tabs or anything when he's playing guitar. Like, he just learns how to play everything by ear.
I don't think he can read sheet music.
I don't know if it's that he can't, but I just read that he doesn't. Maybe he can.
I think I read something similar, and I'm pretty sure he can't read sheet music. Like, he's not a trained musician in any instrument. Which is even nuttier considering the man's like a rock legend, has been playing music since the dawn of time.
My other fun fact is that he actually starred in a movie with Jack Black, Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And he was Satan.
Yeah, he got to play Satan.
He was the Satan character, which was super freaking cool.
The costume design was really, really good on it. Like, you couldn't really quite tell.
Didn't he have, like, the satyr vibes? Mm-hmm. Like, didn't he have, like, hooves?
Yeah, like, hooves and huge
so
horns.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they break one of his horns off and use it as a bong.
Yeah. And he's got, like, this massive drum set.
Yeah.
That's a legendary scene from that movie.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Yeah, David Eric Grohl was born in January of 1969, so he's 52. His first first band was in 1986.
86, yeah, I was going to say, he definitely wasn't a professional, even in the early 80s. He, like I said, he's not that old. But
no,
yeah, late 80s,
I guess what I meant is, like, he's not, like, how do I explain this? It's not that he's been professionally playing music since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
But he's just been playing. I think it would not be a stretch to say he's been playing music for a very, 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 very long time.
Yeah.
Anywho. So, yeah, Dave Grohl week. One of my favorite artists, for sure. I think hands down. Overall, just seems like a great guy. But our albums this week. So my pick for this week is from band Foo Fighters, which has been his main gig since like 1994. He's the lead singer and guitarist in the band. Album we're covering is 2007's Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace, which is the seventh studio album from the band. And Dan's pick for this week is the Them Crooked Vultures self-titled album from 2009. Coincidentally enough, that was Them Crooked Vultures' only release. They've only come out with the one album.
Yeah, yeah, and they actually have talked about it. And they've said that they're interested and planning on releasing a second.
Yeah, I saw that too.
But there's like no details out.
Which, like, reading up on that band, like the lineup there, obviously Dave Grohl.
Oh yeah, it's killer.
But the other two, was it Josh Homme?
Josh Homme. Yeah. Yeah, Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age and John Paul Jones Led Zeppelin on bass.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah, no, like the lineup itself, the three of them, just a fucking killer sound.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But the reason I picked this album is because I wanted one, because I know you picked Foo Fighters first and then I picked this one second, and I wanted one that featured, because I knew Dave was going to be on guitar and vocals for the Foo Fighters album, and I wanted one of him on drums, but I didn't want to kick it back to Nirvana again, because we did that in the pilot season.
Right.
So I was like, this would be a really good one, and, you know, it's got him on drums. It's a bit different of a sound. Josh Homme has got this just like really hypnotic voice that makes me a little weak in the knees, admittedly. And like John Paul Jones is just from Led Zeppelin, you know,
which like
go wrong.
If you read the credits on the album, like who played what, it's like Dave Grohl did backing vocals and drums, and Josh Homme did, you know, lead guitar, or like he did guitar, lead vocals. I think there was one other thing. And then John Paul Jones played
keyboards.
The rest of the instruments, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. He played, he mained the bass guitar, but like he played a bunch of other stuff too.
Yeah. I see. Josh Homme played, he had a part in lead vocals, guitars, and slide guitar. John Paul Jones played bass, keyboards, clavinet, piano, guitar, lap steel guitar, slide bass guitar, mandolin, violin, and backing vocals. Like, wow.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's a lot of instruments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a lot.
And then Dave Grohl's just drums and backing vocals. Which, like, in that lineup, Dave Grohl is not the biggest star in that lineup, which is wild.
No. I would, like, yeah, and none of them try to play like they are.
Right. They mesh really well like, together. Nobody, I think they play there's well nobody, together, for sure.
It meshed really well. It was a very cohesive album. Everything felt like it was part of the same package, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It felt like they were all supposed to be together, which is always good because, you know, sometimes you can get a bunch of songs or a bunch of people together where one's trying to overplay or, you know, if they're not, I don't know. Some of it can feel hodgepodge, but this didn't feel that way to me.
No, not at all. I liked it because, like, you could pick out different songs through the album and you could, like, really kind of hear the significant skill set that each of them are bringing because, like, the song is just highlighting whether it's, like, Dave Grohl on the drums. It's a little bit more drum heavy or like the really sassy attitude guitar that like Josh Homme can bring. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how he's got that like very kind of like bad boy energy to like his music.
Yeah.
And like just the first track, like No One Loves Me and Neither Do I, is just got like a really very Queens of the Stone Age sound.
Totally. Yes. 100%.
Like very, like it's very reminiscent of their sound themselves. And like that's, you know, you can hear the same through a few other ones. And but it's just like you can pick which one that you think sounds like, you know, this could be a Led Zeppelin spinoff or this could be a Foo Fighters spinoff or this could be like Queens of the Stone Age. I thought it was a really, really cool collab.
I did too.
Thing that they did.
Yeah, I did too. And
I liked it a lot.
I thought there were a couple really good tracks on it. That being said, I thought there were also a couple tracks on here that were like, what in the heck is that?
So
what the heck
what
are
is it,
these
number
noises?
10 is like Warsaw?
No.
Yeah, so it was a track 10.
It's 9.
Well, hold on.
9 for 9? Me, for sure. Interlude with Ludes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that one's weird. Really weird. But anyway, we'll get there. But since we're headed down this path, let's go ahead and talk about our feelings about this album. How do you want to do it? You want to go first? Tell me about why you, other than that you wanted to pick an album where our boy DG was on drums, were there any other inspirations behind picking this album over others? Because, you know, Dave actually was, he recorded and toured with Queens of the Stone Age as well.
Yeah. So he actually also did, oh God, who was that else?
He's been in so many bands.
He actually he played with Cage the Elephant for a while too, because their drummer actually had a bursted appendix.
Yep, that sounds right.
So he like stepped in. Anyways, but the reason I chose this one is just because like it wasn't one of his main band albums. Mm-hmm. Like it was a side, like you said earlier, it was a side project. Yep. So I kind of wanted to hear what all of these guys would do. Really, after I learned what the whole lineup was, I was like, okay, that's a lot more interesting than just having Dave.
Did
Grohl.
You know who the lineup was before you heard the album the first time?
So I've listened to the song New Fang I heard on a Discover Weekly like forever ago. So like I was aware of the whole album. Uh-huh. And before we listened to it, I actually like read who all was in the band. I was just like, oh, okay.
Very nice.
Yeah, I was like, all right, that's going on the roster. But I wanted to hear what these guys would do. It's kind of like a fancy restaurant doing a burger spinoff.
Kind of. I can see that. Yeah. Where people like above their pedigree are sort of just like having fun.
Yeah. Like, it felt like a fun little hobby album for them.
Yeah.
So, I liked that a lot. It definitely had a lot higher energy. A couple of songs were a little bit long, like Spinning in Daffodils.
And then Warsaw.
Warsaw, or the First Breath You Take After You Give Up.
Yeah, that's a long.
Such a long
track
name. Long name.
Elephants was long, too.
What was it? Yeah, almost 7 minutes, yeah. So what do you think? What did you?
I think my overall thoughts are that there are some tracks on here that are really fun and really upbeat, and I think do really interesting things. But I think far and away, I don't have the ability to appreciate most of what they've done. And because of that, it fell flat for me a little bit.
Really?
Like, it's one of those things where, like, if you knew who was involved ahead of time, I think it would color your expectation for what this is going to sound like. And that's not to say that any of it sounds outwardly bad aside from Interlude with Ludes. I did not like that track at all. But I felt like at times it was kind of arduous to listen to. like hard to get through some of it, especially coming mm-hmm. down the stretch at the end. I think Gunman, I guess is how you would pronounce it, sort of redeems them on the way out, but it's like a downward trend tracks 8 through 11 for me. Like Reptiles yeah. is really good, and then like 9, 10, 11 are all like, oh my God, okay. I can't even get through this. This is hard.
Gets really old.
Yeah. Where like I think I've heard enough new interesting things through the opening of the album up through about Bandoliers. Because Bandoliers is pretty interesting yeah. too. It's got an interesting vibe to it.
Yeah, that was definitely a weirder one. I liked that one a lot, actually.
But that one's like a weird that I can appreciate. There are some weirds on this that are like, why? You thought a lot about how you could. You didn't think about whether or not you should. And
well, and that's kind of what makes it a side project. It's a hobby.
Oh, yeah,
album.
For sure.
So it's like they wanted to
and
try.
And I respect that 100%.
Yeah, they wanted to try some weird things.
I respect it 100%. Yeah. But for me, like, I think it fails to live up to some expectations, especially being John Paul Jones and Dave Grohl and then Josh Holm, sort of being like the third party in my head. I don't know if that's deserved or not, but yeah, to me, I thought there was more that could have been cool, and I'd love to hear more material from him, but I think this album yeah. ran a little long for me. 13 songs, an hour, 7 minutes. I think it's a little lengthy. So I kind of wish, there would be, you know, if they'd have saved some tracks for maybe a B-side or a deluxe edition or something that wasn't in the regular release or something, and then followed it up with a second release later down the road where they can have some growth,
yeah,
would have been appreciated. But, you know, I also get it that sometimes these are one-off things and they just, you know, it is what it is. And I totally respect that too. But for me, some of the tracks just, and it didn't really do it for me. So in terms of overall playability, in my opinion, it's one of those things where I'm probably not going to go back to this album a whole lot. Like, I don't find myself wanting to listen to most of the tracks on this.
I kind of have the same feeling. Like, I felt like it's not so much number 9 for mm-hmm. me, but after it gets to like Caligula, after Caligula is where I lose it.
Yeah.
Where I really lose interest in it.
I honestly think listening back to Gunman, like if you listen to Gunman by itself, like without yeah. having listened to the entire rest of the album before it, it's a really good song. It okay. plays well. But the problem is you get so tired of listening to it halfway through Caligula that my brain just sort of smooths out as we get through the last two songs. I mean, I go smooth as a billiard ball.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I can't. I think Kaylee and we listened to this on our trip to Pittsburgh last weekend. And we got through the album and I turned to her and I said, thank you for not skipping any of those songs. But if I'm being honest, that was hard to listen to. And she was like, okay, I'm glad we feel the same way about that. it was very interesting. Yeah. But like I said, I mean,
yeah, this was definitely,
it's not terrible, but playability, like replayability, I guess, like it doesn't have it for me. It doesn't have that. Like, I don't want to keep going.
See,
back
I liked side A enough that I'm going to take your usual stance of I liked side A much more than I liked side B.
I could get behind that. I can get behind that big time.
Yeah. It's just the energy is a lot nicer. It's more cohesive. You're not tired of anything yet. But like you said, Interlude with Ludes, Warsaw, and Spinning in Daffodils for me, just like they all just drag on for so long.
Totally.
That's like if you cut like 2 minutes off of each of those songs, I would be much happier.
Yeah, Interlude with Ludes got a down minus for me. Warsaw got a meh minus for me, and Caligula got a down plus. So they're all pretty much right there. Like, not
yeah.
good.
And I think it was Warsaw, like after a while starts taking on this like kind of weird Steppenwolf vibe.
Oh yeah.
Where it like transcends into this kind of like really psychedelic and then just does a really hard spin right back into the main refrain from earlier.
Yeah.
And it like that was a very, like, I got, was it Magic Carpet Ride vibes from mm-hmm. it? You ever hear that song?
Yep.
Felt a lot like that. Very similar writing. So I kind of liked that. I thought that was a cool little reference to them. What was your, you said earlier you were having trouble with the Bean ratings. What did you settle on for this one?
I settled on a 97 for this album.
Really?
Which
okay.
is relatively low, but also, like, not terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not even like a solid, like I have strong feelings about that Bean rating. Like it's a very like soft, maybe 97 is the right number.
Yeah.
But again, my scale is infinite. So 97 out of infinity is not that great considering I have albums I've rated with a 1,200, 240, 544, like in last week's episode. So I think that's about where it lands for me. What about you? What's your
pretty
beanage?
Low for you. Mine came in at like 83.
Okay.
So actually a little high for me.
It is kind of high.
I think it was just, I really liked the creativity that went into everything. A lot of it was very much outside of their normal playing styles from their own bands. And I really like and respect that they took the leap of trying something new.
Yeah, on that note, I do want to give a shout out to Dave Grohl on this album. Drums-wise, some of the most interesting choices I've heard a drummer make in terms of supporting the music.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I think he just has a knack for playing good, consistent rhythms that support the music in a way that doesn't overshadow it, but also makes you go, damn, they're playing really well. Like, that drummer's kicking ass.
Yeah, absolutely. He's I always kind of, and with this album a lot, he's channeling his inner Ringo a little bit.
But like,
he's given
he's
the
like
song
an aggressive
what it
Ringo
needs.
Star.
I think he's taking Ringo's philosophy, but he's also channeling his past with Nirvana of playing with that intensity. That very intent purpose of playing for a reason. So I think it's a little bit of both of those.
Yeah, that and he's not afraid to play. Like, I get
no,
the vibe.
He's not afraid to
every
get out
time
there.
I listen to a track that's got Dave Grohl's drums on it, I'm like, he meant to play every single note on that, and he was like, yeah, I'm doing it. And he plays with a lot of accuracy, which is commendable because not many drummers, including myself, like, I'm terrible at that. Like, sometimes my timing is absolute garbage. But then again, I'm not a professional touring musician. Or a recording musician for that matter. So, you know, maybe that comes with more practice. But, you know, he played in bands like Nirvana for a reason, and he has plenty of opportunities to get the hang of it. So, but yeah, I wanted to take a minute because that was something, even though I didn't like love every part of this album, I did find myself going, wow, that was such an interesting way to phrase that. Or that's like an interesting texture or just like an interesting interpretation of the riff, like the guitars, and how to best play with it, but in both a hard-hitting, aggressive way that doesn't overshadow the rest of the track. But is also like, oh, shit, Dave Grohl on drums.
Yeah. I liked it because, and part of that too is like, you, when I was saying earlier, you can kind of tell the very strong influence that each of these three guys bring to the band as a whole. You know, that's Dave Grohl's very like, precise, intense form of playing. It's very disciplined. It's very, like you said, this guy can play to a metronome.
Cheesy. On that note, I don't think I would categorize his playing as disciplined. I don't think that's the word I would use.
Really?
Because I think he plays with a more feel-based approach than one that's overly technical. Because, right, like, when you think about people
that
play with,
like, the right word,
a lot of what people would say is discipline and like really accurate timing that has a really like technical twinge to it. Like that's sort of where my mind goes, at least as a drummer. Like, I'm like, oh shit, they're playing like when they play
maybe
a role,
then,
when they play
like
a role over time, like they know how many notes they're playing. Where like, I feel like Dave goes, I know what noise I want to make and I'm going to make it and it works. You know what I mean? Like, he just has a really good feel for how
absolutely
the music
right.
should be played.
No, that's a very good point. So maybe discipline's not the right word. Maybe it's
instinct.
Maybe wisdom, even instinct. I think instinct is it, because like you said, it he does play very much by feel, not necessarily by technical and like not by reading, but just by what noise do I want to make.
Right. He's like, I've made that noise before, or like, I think this would sound cool, and then he just like, you know, I don't know how many times he practiced it, probably hundreds of times, because you know. That's what musicians do, but it's one of those things where like, I feel like his acumen, his instinct, his natural ability to play rock music is very present in this record.
Yeah.
And it's something that and really sets the stage and is really telling of him. And it also shines through in all of his work and all the other bands he's played in. Like, it's very obvious that he knows what's up.
Yeah. And that's present too for like Josh Homme. Like, a lot of the lyrics have very, they naturally they're his voice.
Yep.
Right. But it's all in a very him style as well. Like, the way some words are drawn out, the actual lyrical choices that he made, how he ties bars together with words. It was all just very reminiscent of Queens of the Stone Age, and it's just that was like him just, you know, leaving his mark on the band too.
Yeah, I could totally agree with that. So before we head into halftime here, I wanted to know, what is your favorite song from this album? What is your favorite track?
No One Loves Me and Neither Do I. Opener track.
That's a solid choice.
Dude, I loved it. It was, like I said earlier, it was such a callback to Queens of the Stone Age and their like really kind of punk attitude, heavy rock sound. Mm-hmm. The whole like, you know, smoking a cigarette, jean jacket, you know, sweet sunglasses.
Kind of, like, that's it.
They've just got that. That's it. Like, they've just got that bad fucking image, and they're really, it comes through heavily in that. And I love Queens of the Stone Age. I think they're awesome. I love their sound. I think it's unique. I think it's fun. So that one really, really crushed it for me on all fronts.
You know, for many of the same reasons, I found myself gravitating to New Fang is my favorite, but I think Elephants is my second favorite. But for many of the same reasons.
I think New Fang is definitely where Dave Grohl shines the most.
Yes. Yep.
Like, I think that was the track that they were like, Dave Grohl, you're up.
Yep. That's a very driving track.
And he's just
track.
Like, hell yeah.
He's in the driver's seat for
yeah.
sure.
Oh, absolutely. So I loved that. Elephants was really good too, but New Fang would be my second.
Yeah. That, and I thought Reptiles was cool too. That one had a very Led Zeppelin feel to me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the, yeah, that's the John Paul Jones coming in from right field.
Yeah, for sure. That inspiration's worn very loud and proud.
But yeah, like we were talking about earlier, it's just you can hear the heavy influence from everybody. Yeah.
I think throughout it works the album. Too. It works well.
And it all works. Yeah, it's all really cohesive. It's like it's not really three sounds that came together that were like, I don't think anybody really expected it to sound as good together as they did, but it just really worked. Like Dark Chocolate, Salt. Like, you tell people, like, salt your chocolate, they're like, whoa, and then they try it, and it's like, amazing. Oh. Right, it's that. This is kind of like a salted chocolate.
Yeah, I feel like this band would play really well live. Like, I think I would really like to watch these guys live. Because this feels like, like Dave Grohl and Josh Homme were on stage, and John Paul Jones just happened to be there. And they were like, John, come on up here. And then they just, like, had a jam session for an hour. It kind of feels that way.
I would love to
which
go
is
see
super,
them guys live.
Super neat. But enough about this. Let's go ahead and head into halftime here.
Halftime, baby. What are you drinking tonight? Because we're not doing morning recordings anymore, so we can actually drink things that are interesting.
Yes. So in my glass this evening, I have a dram of Dickel 15 Tennessee whiskey.
Okay.
It's the first time I've had a Dickel product. Not the first time I've had Tennessee whiskey, obviously, because Jack Daniel's exists. But overall, I think it falls a little thin for me. But I want to hear about what you're drinking before I talk more about it.
I had gin and juice tonight. I did a Snoop Dogg classic.
What kind of juice?
Because not a lot of people know that he's a gin and juice guy. It was a...
oh, really? Nobody knows that it was like Snoop Dogg's a gin and juice guy?
Nobody knows that.
Nobody
Absolutely
knows that.
Not.
Yeah,
Only
it's a secret.
That.
It's an industry secret, guys.
Snoop industry Dogg's secret. He's a gin and juice guy.
Gin and juice guy, yeah.
You're all welcome. He is. I think he actually released a song about it.
He did. That's why I was being so ultra sarcastic.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Really good. It was like a blueberry lemonade that we got at this market earlier today. And Watershed's Guild Gin, which is flavored with chamomile.
Oh, chamomile. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really good because the chamomile kind of came through in a really, really fun
chamomile
way with the lemonade.
And blueberry feels weird.
It was a little different, but it definitely was good.
Okay.
I would definitely drink one again.
Yeah. I don't know if I would buy a whole bottle of the Dickel 15, but for a long time it wasn't sold in Ohio. So like I'm appreciating the fact that I can even get it. So shout out to Cam. I don't know if you're listening, but Cam with the hookup on the sample here. So that's what I'm drinking tonight. Yes. So cheers.
Cheers.
So what other fun facts you got?
Oh yeah, we've got more fun facts, don't we? Sprinkling them in. Another fun fact, actually I did sprinkle a couple in earlier. The temporarily played with Cage the Elephant was one of them that I actually had written down. Because their drummer had burst an appendix.
Which is crazy.
I bet that was just kind of like a call that he got like 2 days before the show. And they were like, Dave, we got a medical emergency. This guy's out and he's got a busted appendix. We need a drummer. Can you be in, you know, wherever in 2 days? And he'd be like, yeah, sure. I'm not.
He's like, yeah, for enough money, I'll do it.
Yeah. So actually we'll do a Them Crooked Vultures fun fact. So they actually debuted in 2009 as a surprise appearance at Brixton Academy, and they actually opened for the Arctic Monkeys.
No way, really? That's awesome. During 2009, dude, what album was coming out in 2009 for Arctic Monkeys for them to be playing Brixton?
That's a great idea. Humbug came out in 2009. Favorite Worst Nightmare was 2007.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, imagine going to see an Arctic Monkeys show and you get a surprise performance from them Crooked Vultures.
I would love that. Can you imagine not recognizing a band name and then seeing like a member of Led Zeppelin,
Dave Grohl,
Nirvana / Foo Fighters, and Queens of the Stone Age hit the stage at the same time? Ridiculous.
You're just like, wait, what? Yeah, and then they're just like, hey, we're just opening. And then they just open with like New Fang or something. You just hear that huge driving cymbals.
I think they said...
What
was that? I was just reading it. I think they said they opened with... Yeah, they did open with New Fang. That's right.
Did they? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a great... If I was at a show, that's what I would open with.
Totally.
If I was a musician.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
That was their first single, too, which is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, after halftime, let's get into the second album. So you said earlier it's Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace by the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
And this one was really fun to listen to.
So this one's 12 songs, 51 minutes. So, again, pretty long in the grand scheme of things.
That's not too long.
Yeah, but...
I liked it. I thought the length was like really like dead on. I liked the length a lot.
Yeah, I'll say... In this case, it didn't bother me at all that it was a little longer than I normally like, but I'm still going to stand behind the 40-minute runtime being the perfect album length. You give me a 40-minute album, I will listen to it 1,000 times.
Nah.
You give me 40 minutes of solid music, you're doing me a favor.
That's
you give
fair.
Me 50 minutes of music and not all of it's good, I'm going to be a little upset. This is not one of those cases, but it's worth mentioning.
So what'd you think of it all around... Like, what do you think of the songwriting, I guess, is a more direct question I want to ask.
I thought the songwriting was really good, but in the way that they intentionally tried to be more musical in their approach.
Right.
So I was actually reading about this, but this came off of the heels of an album, I think it was from 2005, but it was In Your Honor. Had two sides. It had two discs, and one disc was all rock tunes and one disc was all acoustic songs.
So they
did it on purpose because they wanted to, like, you know, for people that like rock music have rock music, and then for people that like acoustic stuff have a bunch of acoustic stuff. And then coming into this album, they were like, but we can do both, so why not just like make it into the same thing?
Yeah.
Why bother making an entire second album of acoustic songs when we can just showcase how good we are at what we do?
Yeah.
Which I thought was
I enjoyed the songwriting a lot. I thought it was a lot more mature approach.
Mm.
I think that they definitely were aiming to have a very balanced album. Like, side A was very much driving rock. Side B had a lot more emotion behind it.
I thought they did a good job of mixing it, to be honest.
It was very well mixed too. Like, it definitely wasn't like one side was all this and then second side was all that. It kind of had a very nice transition from one styling to the next. But I think starting it with The Pretender has that really, really fun energy. And it carries the first four or five songs, I think, are all that really nice, drivey rock kind of tunes. And then Stranger Things Have Happened comes in. And I think that's the one where it's just like metronome playing in the back. And then he's just playing the acoustic.
Yeah,
and
that one's really cool.
It goes back into, and then Cheer Up Boys and Summer's End are both kind of more rocky.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ballad of Beaconsfield Miners is him like playing an acoustic guitar, but like banjo style.
It's actually not him playing, but... Yes.
Oh, that's not?
No.
Oh.
It'd be cool if it was, but no.
Oh. I thought it was him. Who was it then?
It's a Khaki King.
Oh. Damn, I thought that was him.
She's like a jazz guitarist.
I was like, damn. Gotcha.
But that's just on
the
album.
Well, either way, still, it sounded really cool. I liked the song a lot. I thought it was very different.
Yeah.
And I liked that they did an acoustic and they were like, just playing it banjo style. No lyrics, no words, nothing else with it. Just ripping it.
Yeah. I thought it was cool too. And there's actually a little note in here that says the Khaki King recorded the studio version, but Dave said he showed it to her once and then she shredded it 10 times better than he had ever played it ever.
That's exactly something he would say. Like, he probably did it really well. He's just like, God damn it, this woman is just way better than me at this.
Yeah. Well, somebody who's classically trained is going to, you know, naturally take that up a little easier and can play it with a little bit
but
more
that just,
finesse. But
that just plays to what we said earlier of how he's just a really great dude.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm sure he's just one of those guys that just, like, is aware of his own shortcomings and knows to, like, when to give up and when to let other people drive the ship. Is that,
and he knows
I
when
mean,
to make
that's
a fresh
skill.
Pot of coffee.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that video is so funny. I love that video so much.
We'll put that up on our Twitter for everybody to see.
Yes, totally. But if you haven't seen it yet, it's called Fresh Pots. It actually came out of the Them Crooked Vultures album recording sessions. I think it was released a year after the album came out, and people were like, oh, look, they're making a second one. But it was actually just recordings from when they were tracking the first album. And
that's great.
Yeah, Dave goes on a tear, and it's all about his coffee addiction. Oh my God, it's classic internet fodder.
It's so
awesome.
Funny.
I love it.
It's so good.
That became the all mantra right, of our 3 o'clock coffee runs at work for like 6 months.
Dude,
we
I
would,
love that.
We would just go, fresh pots! And then everybody would gather, and we'd walk to the cafe together to get a cup of coffee.
Like a flock of birds.
Yeah, dude, it was awesome.
They come.
It was awesome. I miss that so much. That was so fun. But anyway, like you said, back to the album here. So we mentioned that there's a really interesting mix of like acoustic stylings and like rock stylings, which was really interesting. And to carry on that same theme, this like one thing next to something else that doesn't really seem all that related, the album cover for this was super interesting. Because and I've seen a couple variations of it where one of them is like a ray gun almost, but then there are elements of it that are tube amps from like guitars, like from guitar amplifiers.
Oh, okay.
And then in the other variation I've seen, it's like an atomic bomb, but instead of it being like the actual bomb portion being the head, it's the head of a tube amp.
Oh, is that what that is?
It's the same thing.
Oh.
Yeah. It's this juxtaposition of like something dangerous with something completely innocuous, just not dangerous at all. That I thought was
I didn't
really
know what
cool.
it was. I assumed it was something, but that is really cool.
But it carries on that theme, that juxtaposition of soft and hard and, you know, aggressive and sensitive and that sort of thing. So I thought that was a really cool node or nod to themselves, which was neat. But let's talk about some of the tracks here. So we talked about Ballad of Beaconsfield Miners, which is it's actually to date the only instrumental song from Foo Fighters. Do you know that?
Really? No, I did not know that. That's a fun fact.
Yeah.
Hayden, you brought a fun fact today. Way to go.
I'm going to high five myself for that one.
Proud of you. Good job.
Yeah. Super awesome. And then other ones. The Pretender is the best song on the album, period. End of story. Doesn't matter what anybody else says.
Bold statement, but I'll let it stand.
It's really not bold. It's really just obvious.
No, I would probably agree. Out of all of them, that was definitely the best. I actually remember listening to The Pretender when I was a kid, playing Midnight Club Dub Edition on the PS2.
Yes.
Like, that's the only song I would actually look for and just keep playing it over and over. And I'm just like, yeah! And like ripping corners and stuff.
Yeah, dude, that... Oh, man. That song...
Love it.
Bro, it brings me back so far. I remember the first time I watched the music video for it. You remember the music video?
Never watched it.
It's really cool. So they're playing in like it's like a warehouse type thing.
Okay.
And they start out the way they do. And as soon as they like bust into, maybe it's closer to the end, but there's this like explosion of like red, I wouldn't say it's paint because I don't think it is. But, oh, man, you'll have to check it out. We'll share the link on our Twitter page as well for that. But that's a music video that I remember watching very often in the land before I owned an MP3 player. It was like, you know, when everybody listened to music on YouTube all the time because that's where it was free. Yeah, this is one I would frequent.
I remember. No, that was great. I liked it a lot. I liked Long Road to Ruin had a very American feel to me. Did you get that vibe?
Yeah, I think I could see it being categorized that way.
just kind of like the intro to it was, it just felt like kind of felt patriotic-ish. I don't know, maybe I'm reading into that too wrong, but
I mean, there's no such thing as a wrong interpretation unless it's rooted in facts and you don't have the facts.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
But in this case, I don't think that that's a misplaced
thought. It just felt like, it just felt very kind of like comforty American home feels. Don't know why, just does though.
I mean,
Summer's
really
End
good.
I thought was really good too. It is good. Yeah.
Summer's End was good.
I'd love to, I should have gone into and actually read the lyrics. I feel like that would have helped.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to read all the lyrics, but the one thing about Dave Grohl singing too is he can enunciate pretty well. So
yeah, he's very easy to understand.
Yeah, he's pretty easy to, if you're paying attention, you can hear the lyrics, which is nice.
Yeah.
Because not every lyricist, not every singer is like that.
No.
But I'll tell you what my second favorite track was, and always has been.
Yeah, go for it.
Is But Honestly, the 11th track.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's like the juxtaposition thing in one song. Like The Pretender does it, but this is another track that does it really well. Because the first, like, probably 5/8 of the song are just an acoustic guitar and Dave Grohl singing. And then
it kicks into this like really cool, really rad rock composition to it.
Yeah, the building section, like getting into the rock part is, it like borderline gives me chills every time I listen to it.
I get that. I totally understand that.
He goes through a couple verses of the acoustic stuff, and then you sort of like hit that bridge section where it's starting to head into the next part. It's like, oh shit, it's coming. That it's great. It's that's, like I said, I think that's my second favorite song on the album. It's actually the only song on the album that I know how to play very, very amateurly on guitar. Like,
oh, nice.
I can play that first part, the acoustic part that just repeats over and over and over and over again.
That's right.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. But anyway,
so what was your beans rating?
For this one, I'm giving a whopping 210 beans.
Wow.
210.
That's a lot higher than the last one.
It is a lot higher than the last one, and that's because I like this album a lot more than I like the other one.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
For
me, it falls somewhere between Toe and Car Seat Headrest in terms of playability. I think it falls pretty much right in there for me. I think a lot of these songs have a lot of, like, I don't get tired of listening to them. I will say that while The Ballad of Beaconsfield Miners is really good, most of the time I skip it just because it's instrumental and it's not what I come to Foo Fighters to listen to. But
that's totally, yeah, I get
overall,
that.
Overall, I think playability of the whole record is really good, really cohesive. I think the sound is consistent throughout and the idea is consistent throughout. So, you know, you see a more musical approach to playing throughout, mixing, you know, understated, softer music with loud, boisterous, in-your-face type stuff repeated throughout. I think they've done that really well. Mm-hmm. And again, this was sort of one of my first forays into rock music. I actually picked up the next release from Foo Fighters because this one was so good. Like, it's one of the only albums I own in a physical form at all. Like, I have the CD for it. And I remember getting the CD the day it came out. I sent my mom out to get it because I couldn't drive. But,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what this was a pivotal album for me getting into rock music. And this was sort of my first, I'll say it was my first conscious exposure to Dave Grohl. This was sort of my first foray. Because, like, obviously I had heard songs by Nirvana before. I've heard songs like Learn to Fly and I think it was Best of You came out before this. But in general, this was sort of the first, and Monkey Wrench, I'd heard that before, but this was sort of the first complete collection of like Dave Grohl songs, and then I became sort of aware of who they were, and then the rest is history. Yeah, this one has a special place for me. So 210 for me in terms of beanage.
210.
What about you? Where are we at in Dan's bean range?
So at Dirty Dan's Clean Beans, we've got 86 total for this.
Like that. I like that.
It's a bit higher. Only a little bit higher than them Crooked Vultures. But the main reason for me that it got a little bit higher is just because, like you said, the replayability of it is a lot nicer.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get tiring after nine of the 13 songs, 12 songs. And I enjoyed every single one of the songs individually, as well as tied together as an album, because mm-hmm. there was a lot of fun, a lot of just good fun music on the first half, and just good to listen to music on the back half. Mm-hmm. Like, I really enjoyed Ballad of Beaconsfield Miners. I really enjoyed The Soft Piano of Home.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. What a way to close
it
out.
It was beautiful. It was such a great, great closing song. I always talk about how great openers... The Pretender's a good opener. Home is a better closer.
Yeah, I agree. There's not many,
like,
many albums out there.
It was such a great way...
That do that part well.
Just to conclude everything in this just really... beautiful piano. I miss home. I miss my family. I love this job and I love my mm-hmm. life, but I need to go see my family too, you know? And I think that's just, as a whole, it was start to end just very well written, really well executed, and I enjoyed all of it.
Yeah.
Really, really well. But right. I don't think top down that it's as well written as, say, like The Stranger.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because The Stranger is just so heavily laden with things of, like, metaphor and storytelling
mm-hmm.
and you know, life lessons and things like that. Whereas this one is simply just more of, like, play rock for rock's sake and then have the softer ones be the one that carry a strong message. Mm-hmm. So I liked it a lot, just not quite as much as The Stranger, but it definitely crushed it for me.
Sweet. I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, me too. I've liked Foo Fighters. They're never one that I actually, like, actively sought out, just because they were always, like, on my radar. I know who they are. I know who they're great, that they're great. Mm-hmm. But, like, I just never made an effort to actually listen to them. So I'm honestly happy that I finally did for this episode, because I really liked it a lot.
Great. Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So one last little fun fact here. For this,
yeah,
for Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace, did you know that the only reason that this album is named that is because they didn't know what name to use and pulled the lyrics out of Home and made it that way? Like, they didn't actually have a name for the album.
I was wondering where the name came from, but that's great.
Because, you know, sometimes, like, they build, like, a whole thing around the name of the album, and it's, like, got this, like, second layer of whatever. I think that's another thing with Dave Grohl is, like, he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's not afraid to just say, like, yeah, I just made it up. Like, it is what it is. I don't care.
Yeah, he's not gonna bullshit people about it. He's just like, this is exactly where it came from. Like, it's not that. There's nothing deeper to it than this.
Yeah. So, but what other fun facts do you have?
I've got, let's see. His primary stage guitar is actually a Pelham Blue Gibson DG335.
DG. Love it.
And it's this... Yeah, and it's just this, like, really sweet baby blue retro color, and it's got
it really
that, like, classic
beautiful
look to it. It's a really sexy guitar. It looks sweet.
It's a hollow body, isn't it? I think it's a hollow body. It's huge.
Yeah, it's big. It's a big guitar. It's definitely not a small one. One more. Let's see. Ah, here we go. He is the third wealthiest drummer in the world. Did you want to try to guess the other two?
Oh, Ringo.
Ringo is one of them, yep.
The second? Because I assume, is Ringo the richest drummer in the world?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. So yeah. I'm looking for number two. Who do I think the second richest drummer in the world is? I would have to lean... Are they still alive? They're still alive, right?
Yeah, still alive. Yep.
It's not Neil Peart, RIP.
Nope. No, because rest,
John
rest
Bonham.
In Peart. It is not John Bonham.
Well, because he's dead.
Well, yeah.
Why am I struggling so hard with this one? It should be relatively obvious to me.
How about Phil Collins?
That's who. Duh. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can't even believe that's not a name that
It's obvious now, because you're just like, man, that dude's made so much music. Because, like, imagine how many movies he's made music for.
Literally. But I will say...
But, like, he's also a phenomenal artist. He's a great musician.
He is well known for his drumming, but is more well known for every other thing he's done. Like,
yeah,
the Tarzan soundtrack.
Yeah. But at his core, he is a drummer.
Yeah, I know. I'm right there. I mean, it's like Dave Grohl, right? Dave Grohl's a drummer, but he's a lead guitarist and lead vocalist in a rock band. Like,
yeah, at the core, he's a drummer, but he does other things too. So yeah, there's
very
the,
interesting. That is a cool
final
fun fact.
Yeah, there's the final final fun fact for the night. So now we get to move into my favorite part, where we play song lyric or shitpost, where I get to read something from the internet, and Hayden has to tell me whether it's from a song lyric or from a shitpost from the internet. So, all right, you ready?
I was born ready.
Were you born ready?
I was all born right, ready. Brad.
Mick Money Shot.
Just the word?
That's the line.
Mick Money Shot?
Just Mick Money Shot.
Mick Money Shot.
Yep.
That's a shit post.
Got.
I'm almost certain.
Got any idea?
I have a thought.
I'm going to start adding a time limit. I'm gonna start putting a time limit on this. After this episode, that's what we're doing. That's how I'm going to start making this
harder.
Because you keep winning.
I said it's a shit post.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. It glitched out. Yeah, it's a shit. Oh, yeah, it's a shit post.
Yeah. It seemed relatively obvious to me.
Oh. Yes,
mostly
sir.
Because I try to think of... So when you ask me these questions, I always try to think of the context in which I think I would have seen it or you would have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one context I could think about this one in. So to me, pretty obviously a shit post.
That's
you got to find harder ones, man. I'm killing you on this.
Yeah. I'm going to start putting a time limit on it. I'm going to start telling you like 5 seconds.
Oh, man.
Gun to
That's
your head.
Quick. But yeah. I like it.
Because
we'll
I need to start winning. I need to start winning. I don't like how many times you win.
They don't want to see you win.
That's right.
Where's DJ Khaled when you need him?
Being rich and doing whatever he wants.
Yeah, whatever DJ Khaled does, like, what does he do other than
he's
talk a on
a
song?
That's all
his role in music is a facilitator, and that's it.
Yeah,
he does nothing
that's
else.
That's literally it.
Somebody else makes his beats for him. Nope. Somebody else does all the production for him. All he does is say, hey, Drake, I think you should come sing over this beat. And then I'll give you most of the money. How's that? And Drake goes, I don't know. The last song we made like $3 billion. So I think I'm in. And then all of a sudden you have a new DJ Khaled album.
Yep.
But anyway, he's got a good head on his shoulders in terms of being a good motivator, like a motivational speaker type deal.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
I would go to one motivating. Of his talks. I think I would pay money to go to one of his talks, if not just for the memes.
I'm DJ Khaled. Welcome to my TED Talk.
No, I always imagine him in like a Tony Robbins type talk where he's like walking around an arena like the, like there's just like a stadium full of people and he's like walking around talking to people, like giving people face-to-face advice.
That's hilarious.
Don't you think that would be so funny, like seeing DJ Khaled like putz around an arena stage? Because like right at his shows he just like jumps around and like dances and stuff, right? Because like he doesn't really have a part in the songs. Like, if you went to a DJ Khaled concert, you're just listening to the songs that he recorded, like, played back to you.
Huh.
Because he doesn't have anything
to
contribute.
I'm glad I don't go to DJ Khaled shows.
Well, I don't either, but if you think about it. Like, unless he brings, like, literally all of Hollywood with him on tour, they can't perform those songs live.
That's fine.
Unless he's, like, literally doing the DJ thing, like, he's got the turntables going, which I think there's a time in his life he did that. But I think most of the time nowadays... That's not the case. It's just a plate. Like, his concerts are just a giant playback venue.
Yeah.
Anywho, enough about DJ Khaled and enough about me winning again. Undefeated, baby.
I'm dead.
Just kidding. I've lost like twice.
I'm mad.
What am I, 6-2?
I can't
Is it
win
six
against
and two
you
now?
Apparently. Like 8-2. I don't know, man.
How many? I don't even have. I got an idea. We'll just make up a new number every time. But I've only ever lost twice. How's that?
That's all I know. All
right. Cool. So it'll just change every time. It'll be fine. Like, ah, yeah, I'm like 5-2.
That works.
And then next time we say it'll be, ah, he's 7-2. The wins will fluctuate, but the losses will remain static.
I think I'm 15-6. Yeah, just start
147-2.
That sounds right. That tracks.
Love it.
All right. Well, I think that's about it for the night, don't you?
Yeah. I think we had a good conversation. I thought both of these albums were solid, but to me there was a clear winner. Glad to hear you enjoyed it just as much as I did.
Yeah.
And shout outs to you, Dave Grohl, for being the absolute badass.
Yeah, please
you
hear
are.
Us.
And if you are listening to this,
please one day.
I love you. And let's hang out. Call me.
Would love to hang out with Dave Grohl.
Totally. That's a bucket list item right there. If I could hang out with Dave Grohl for like an
that
hour.
Is a bucket.
Thanks for tuning in to Episode 5 of the Setlist Audio Club with Hayden and Dan. Catch us next week while we discuss Vista Kicks' 20-something Nightmare and Gallant's Ology. If you like the show, please consider subscribing anywhere you get your podcasts. Also, follow us on Twitter at SetlistAC for show updates and weekly previews. If you have any questions, have any feedback for us, or even have ideas for future episodes, feel free to shoot us an email at setlistac@gmail.com or send us a DM on Twitter @setlistac.